Happy Wednesday, Technically Female Tribe. It's Jasmine here for another episode of the Technically Female Podcast. I hope everyone is having a great week. The fall time seems to be coming. Summer is looking to be over. But I have a amazing guest today, Ivana, who is here to talk with you and spread some of that positive vibes. Hi, Ivana. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jasmine. How are you today?
Doing well, doing well. Alive and breathing, and that's all you can ask for these days, right? And being healthy, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Completely being healthy.
I know. And so, you know, before we kind of get started and learn a little bit more about you, like, can you give us a little bit of insight into who you are and, you know, a little bit about your STEM journey up until this point?
Absolutely. So, like I mentioned before, I'm Ivana. I'm 25 years old, so my STEM journey hasn't been too long so far, but I was born in Venezuela to Venezuelan and Serbian parents, which kind of gives me that bit of a, like, diversity and cultural background.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, yeah, and definitely for, like, my STEM journey, like, I grew up, like, you know, helping my dad with tools and just, like, building things around the house. Like, that was always, like, fun. Like, in high school, every time you'd go to IKEA and build furniture, like, that was always, you know, ultimate best thing to do. and throughout high school, I was loved math and science. That was always, like, my strong suit. So I knew definitely engineering was the sort of STEM path I wanted to go in. Mm-hmm. So when I, you know, I went to school in Florida, and then I went to college in Florida as well. Kind of, like, I always knew engineering was sort of the passion. I was always, like, on the fence of, like, what kind of engineering, right? There's so many different fields. So throughout my career, I kind of switched different majors. They were all still in the engineering realm. So started off with, like, biomedical, then switched to nuclear, and then ended up in the mechanical field.
Wow.
So I switched up toward, like, you know, the first couple of years in college, just because I was a bit undecided on, like, what specific thing did I want to do? But once I picked the mechanical, like, engineering route, like, the internships I had and the experiences and kind of classes I got access to was, like, you know, out of this world. It was great. So I definitely knew, like, that was the right path that I had chosen.
Yeah. But to your point, too, I think we don't talk about this enough. You started in biomedical engineering, and then you went into nuclear and then mechanical. But I think sometimes going into school or college or university, there's a pressure of you got to pick the right engineering discipline. And to your point, there's so many of them, and they're, you know, adding them every year. But it's like you don't really have any guide, right, to know which one to pick. And I think sometimes it seems to be frowned upon if you change your major to a different engineering discipline, like while you're in school. Is that something that you kind of experienced as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, like, going in, I was, like, totally dead set. I'm like, I'm going to go biomedical so I can do pre-med and end up being a doctor. And, you know, first 2 weeks of that, I was like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. But it definitely, I think I felt that, like, every time when I was in mechanical, I was, like, let's say, like, a semester behind everybody else. So I graduated in, like, 5 years instead of four. Like, I felt, like, initially I was getting, like, a bit of, like, the judgy kind of looks, like, oh, you're just so old, but you're still, like, you're older, but you're taking, like, you know, the prereq courses that I needed to kind of get over so I can move on to, like, the higher end, like, the higher up courses, and, like, that kind of felt a little strange at first, like, but to me, it was, like, I had no idea, like, this is what I wanted to do from the beginning, and I don't know, like, looking back now, I wish I would have just, like, let go of that pressure on myself that I had to know what to do, like, you know, at 18 years old.
Right, and know what you want to be when you want to grow up, and I'm like, I'm 30, and I still don't know. Like, I tell people all the time, like, it's good for this season. Like, what I do now is good for the season. Is this what I want to do, like, retire into? Probably not, but, like, I think there's a lot of pressure, and that's so scary, too,
like, to think of, like, oh, from now to 30 years later, like, are you still going to like what you're doing?
It's like, because it's almost like in school they expect you to, like, know what you want to do, major in it, and then based on your major, like, know what your role is going to be. Like, it's very cookie cutter, but I mean, in the real world, in real life, like, your trajectory is not always cookie cutter. Like, there's a lot of people that do non-traditional paths, which is something that I did, and I'm, you know, so glad that I didn't let, you know, to your point, that unnecessary pressure or those cookie cutter stipulations kind of define like what my, you know, life is going to be like or what my career is going to be like, because I'm pretty sure I'd be pretty miserable if I did allow someone to kind of define that for me. So no, I totally get that. We're already, you know, spitting great knowledge, and we're only on who are you? So this is going to be great. This is going to be awesome. And so you mentioned how, you know, you went from biomed to nuclear, which is super hard. I think I only know one other person on this planet that did nuclear engineering. So that's why when you said nuclear, I was like, oh man. And then you went into mechanical. And so when you decided to pursue mechanical engineering, what were your expectations in regard to having accessibility to other female engineers? And based on those expectations or what you experienced, I want you to talk about that a little bit. What steps did you take to adapt and overcome, you know, maybe being one of the few? And was that kind of your expectation going into it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think my biggest shock, which I guess what went from to a positive shock, was when I was nuclear for about a year, but I was still taking general engineering courses, so it wasn't too deep into nuclear field. But in those courses, I was one of two girls. And when I moved over to mechanical, maybe I was, one of 10, which was a drastic change for me, coming from a major that literally had no females at all.
Wow.
So I feel like that was a huge positive change. Like, oh yeah, there's other people like me. But I think the expectations was okay, this is going to be a little bit better. I think for engineering, especially for a female engineer, I look for those people that they're experiencing the same things I feel. When you walk into a class, and I feel like sometimes I'm the only one that notices, I'm the only girl right
I
now, or
know.
I'm one of three. So I think initially it was a little bit better than what I had experienced semesters before, but it was still obviously not to the extent that we would obviously love it to be, a 50-50
Oh,
kind of thing.
yeah, of course.
But yeah, and then initially when I went through mechanical, I was in searching for a group of people that were in the same major as me that I could study with and stuff like that. So I had initially started rushing for engineering at an engineering fraternity. And I went through that process, but it felt really weird because people who were rushing were freshmen and I wasn't. So I always felt so old. So I decided to instead join Society of Women Engineers, which gave me I would say, if I look back now, my bestest college friends ever. They turned out to be my roommates and the people I went on trips with. I obviously still talk to them constantly now. But yeah, I clearly remember going into their office hours and saying hey, I feel like I'm old, even though, in college, nobody's old.
Right.
I feel like I'm really old because, God forbid I'm a junior and, I'm just taking this major.
Right.
What sort of opportunities do I have? Can I join this club and stuff like that? And I think that changed my perspective altogether. It gave me a group of friends and a group of female engineers through all engineering disciplines, not only mechanical, and that's been great. It gives you they would work on projects that maybe you sometimes would help in, and
Right.
vice versa and stuff like that. But as soon as I joined, I felt like this huge weight off my shoulders because I just felt like I had someone to connect with.
Oh yeah.
And have kind of in a way your tribe that you're going with, we're all in this together kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. SWE is
But yeah,
like one
it
of
was
my
huge.
favorites. Yeah, SWE is one of my favorites. And I think it's one of those things where you have, to your point, you have people that you connect with that are in engineering majors or engineering disciplines, even if they're not in your specific one. You get to meet people that are doing, you know, maybe the fundamental courses, but then doing other courses that are relatable, and you learn kind of what they're doing. But then also just to have the sounding board of this sucks. Engineering is hard. I'm tired of all these exams. I feel like I'm studying all the time. I don't feel like I'm doing a good job at what it is. And just to have to your point, a tribe to vent to and understand just the complexity and the struggle of engineering, but then also the how do you maneuver around being, to your point, like one of few women and the major, right? Like, how do you navigate through that, and how do you have support? I always joke, but seriously, like, it was like it never failed that a SWE conference, because I was in SWE too, like, would come up, or something would come up for SWE, like, right when I needed it, like, right when I was like, I'm getting ready to give up, like, I'm gonna change my major, screw the scholarship, like, I'm just gonna, like, this is just brutal. And it seemed like every time there was an event, or there was a conference, or there was just something to your point, reinvigorate, like, this is why you're here. And you have people that are supporting you, even if it's just like, hey, I'm here for you. You just vent to me, right? Like, I love to
Yeah,
experience that too.
it was. I think to your point of like the events and the conferences, like I remember like joining like SWE, and then that same semester I decided to go to like the conference for the first time, and I just became like I remember like walking into like the like career fair area with like so many people like you, and that to me was like incredible feeling. And I was just like, I remember coming back to school and reminding myself like this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Like, because I want that feeling like everywhere I go.
And I think to your point, like adapting and being the minority or minimal like subject group in like the broader like engineering discipline, like you adapt by like leaning into those opportunities where you can not be the minority, right? Or where you can find support and whatever that looks like. And it could be like, hey, I don't find support in like being around other female engineers. Maybe I find support in being around people that aren't in my major. Like to your point, like even though you were around people that were engineers but in different disciplines, like it may have just been a breath of fresh air to like be around people that don't talk about mechanical engineering all the time. Or like, you know, you can just learn about other things that aren't in your
Oh,
24/7 day to day, like, oh, I just don't want to talk about like in my part, like C++, like, I don't talk about that anymore. Like, I just want to talk about something else. So I think exposure to other things and
No,
other
and
people.
I think for that note, like one of the SWE members became my roommate, and she was computer science, and like there'd be times that she's like, I'm really stuck on this question. Can you please look at it? Can you tell me if you see it differently? And like, you know, like that sort of experience I would have never had if like I stuck with people like in my major too.
Yeah, it's almost like the gym for me. Like I love the gym, obviously not right now because of COVID, like I'm totally out of the gym, but like I like to see people suffer beside me. Like I'll pay to go to the gym so I can see people suffer. That sounds really rude, but it's because like I know I'm not alone. It's that like we're on a team or we're together and I see you and you see me, and the same thing with like engineering. Like as long as I know I'm not doing this alone, it just makes it a lot more easier. And so you know, went through your engineering degree, you got your engineering degree, and you know, now you're a technical support engineer at National Instruments. And so you know, everyone always asks, you know, what do you do? Like, you know, what does that look like? And so I'm going to ask you the typical question because I'm curious too. Like, what does a day in the life look like as an engineer now that you're out of you know, undergrad and school? And what has been your favorite project thus far that you've been able to be a part of?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been on and on now for a little over 2 years. I started off as like they had this engineering leadership program initially, but now have moved into their like technical support engineering organization.
Cool.
And I'd say like my work, like my day is kind of split in two. Half the day, or like approximately half the day, is kind of more focused on talking with the customers, helping them find like creative ways to solve their like complex technical issues using our product. So, right, NI is a test and measurement company. So most of our customers are fellow engineers. So a lot of my time consists of like helping other engineers find solutions to some of the issues that maybe they maybe come up. They may come up with throughout like the testing and measurement of their devices and stuff like that.
Cool.
And then the other part is more about like giving back to my peers. So through the technical support group, we've kind of now increased our like vertical expertise in terms of like technical knowledge. So I am now like a technical go-to for some of our NI products. So I help like fellow peers who may not know everything about this particular like line of products. Kind of solve their issues as well, and any sort of roadblocks they may be encountering.
Yeah, I bet that's a humbling experience, huh? Because it's like you, I'm this me. Like, are you sure? Like, I'm the one that you want to come to ask all these questions to. It's got to be rewarding, right?
Oh yeah, I think that's my favorite part. I like helping customers, and that also has its rewarding part. But helping my peers and like knowing that like you know these are the people I work with on a daily basis, like that is like really great. Because I don't know, you kind of feel like you're giving back to the group.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I always say for me too, it's like not always about money or like the position or that or you know, some things that a lot of people are interested in, but for me it's about helping others, right? Like giving back, providing, you know, that sounding board or guiding them to your point to help solve their issues or their problems and being seen as someone that's, you know, there to support them and have their back at the end of the day. And I think sometimes those types of instances are a lot more valuable than the other like tangible things that come with the job, for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
And
pretty
yeah,
cool.
and then on to your second question about the project. So far, NI has like an annual conference that happens this year. Obviously, COVID
Yeah.
has moved it along. But in the past, there used to be this conference in downtown Austin that NI would host. They would kind of present like, you know, their, you know, newest products and invite customers to come and kind of play around. We had like a demo floor to like play around with our equipment and what sort of applications you can use it for. And I got to participate in a keynote demo for not this year, I guess last year's conference, where it was like Star Wars themed.
Oh,
And one of like the intro demos was a like a lightsaber battle duel.
cool.
That was really great. So I got to like create and design the demo that incorporated the lightsabers and all of like data acquisition system.
Wow.
So we can showcase like, you know, gathering data, like when like, you know, the lightsabers were hit, we would have like these spikes on the screen pop up. And that was really, really cool because like following like the couple of weeks afterwards, like, you know, the video kept getting shared like across the company. I'm like, I just felt like really cool, like thinking like, oh, I've done that. Like I did that.
Like, mommy, I made
So
it. Like, this is what I did. No, I totally understand that. That's really cool. That's really cool to like, I think too, like coming out with a proof of concept or an idea and then seeing it into fruition is also very rewarding. Like, right? Like you probably had an idea or an idea was given to you and you kind of got to like manipulate it and figure out how you wanted to come to life and then seeing it come to life and then being shared broadly is probably really cool too.
yeah, that was really awesome. I always joke to see if I could keep the lightsaber just because I felt like such a connection to
Oh, I bet.
the demo.
I can only imagine, for sure, for sure. And so I want to talk a little bit about you a little bit even more, but more of like where you come from. And so you mentioned, you know, you were born in Venezuela. Your parents are Venezuelan and Serbian, and as well as you were raised in Puerto Rico. And so how would you say your exposure to such vibrant cultures impacted your professional trajectory? Like, did that have an impact at all in it, and what did that look like?
I think for sure, like, so both my dad and my sister are engineers, so I think that impacted me a lot in terms of like that I wanted to go down the STEM path just because it was like the experience I had growing up. Like I said, I remember like always handing out tools to my dad in the garage, and like even nowadays I've like slowly become my mom's like handyman, and like I'm the one who hangs the TV on the wall, and I'm the one who like fixes things around the house when I go visit. So I would say like just the environment of being like with family members that have also gone down that path has like truly impacted me. As far as like culture, like with my background and like the languages I know how to speak just because of my family and like where we've lived, it has created this like fire in me that I want in my future to have some sort of like global impact on what I do, whether that is like working with a global group. Just to like learn other people's culture, just because it is something that like I enjoyed so much growing up, that I want to like continue doing that in my career. I haven't truly found what yet, but I definitely know that that's like what I would like my future to hold. But I think like another note that like coming from like a very traditional family in terms of like gender roles, like right when I grew up, like my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She used to cook, clean around the house, kind of handle like the house chores, like taking care of the kids, while my dad was the one, you know, working at his engineering job and, you know, dealing more of like, would you say like, you know, the very cookie cutter gender roles. I think it has made me like open my eyes to realize that that maybe is not what I would like in my future. Like, it has made me like with my sister, she recently found out she was pregnant, and like for her and I, we talk and we're like, you know, like we want to keep working. We want to be able to do it all. Like, and I think that's sort of like in a way, like growing up with such a, like, you know, cookie cutter, this is what, like, the female's supposed to do, this is what the dad's supposed to do, it has grown, like, this, like, fire, like, that's not what I want. I want it to be, like, as equal as possible. Like, I think both partners take part, like, I can still be a successful engineer and also be a parent when I choose, like, it's just, I think that has definitely, like, got, like, impacted me, like, through my culture, and, like, it's the stuff that I talk to my mom about, like, today. Like, she thinks that it's funny that, like, both my sister and myself, like, got partners that, like, do clean and cook, and, like, we share chores and responsibilities, and she's like, it's funny because, like, you guys didn't grow up seeing that, and I was like, well, we didn't, but we realized that that's not what we wanted.
No, that's true. I didn't think about it that way too. But I know in like my life too, like my parents are both, you know, 50-52. And so seeing that, I was like, oh, this is definitely what I want. And then on the like being able to take care of yourself side, like my dad was always like, you need to always have money for yourself. Like anytime you go anywhere, like you need to be able to take care of yourself. So sometimes like in my mind, then I overcompensate. Like someone may be, you know, trying to take care of me. Like, no, I got like, no, Jasmine, like I got you. I'm like, okay. But it's just those things that's like when you see things and you're like, oh, this is cool. But like, I don't want my life to be like that. It can have that effect, you know, of what shaped up. It's just, for me, it's just crazy that the little things like that when you grow up really do could be a turning point or could be like a small factor in how the rest of your life turns up just based on just little things that happen. I think we take sometimes for granted that things that happen to us younger mold us into who we become. And it's so interesting as you get older, you'll see it more and more. And it's just like, oh, wow. I didn't think about it. It was minuscule at a time back then, but then as you get older, like, oh no, that really did kind of shift, you know, who I am and who I've become.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And speaking of who you become, I want to talk a little bit about mentorship. Cause I think it's really important. And, you know, there's always questions around this. And so in your opinion, what are the top three keys to being an impactful mentor? Like what, maybe something that you see, three things you see in your mentor that you love or things that you wish, in the future you have a mentor that provides. And then what advice would you give to the tribe to find a solid mentor during their STEM journey? Like, how do you find one? What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for, like, the three keys, I think for my particular mentor, like, she's always very much available. so I definitely love that because I can just, like, reach, text, send an email, like, hey, can we meet next week or something like that? And she's always, like, you know, ready to meet when I seek out her help. And I think another key will be, like, candidness. I think being honest towards, like, any situation. Like, my mentor has become, like, a professional mentor, but she's also, like, you know, I talk to her about my family and stuff like that. And, like, just being able to have that, like, candid conversation with a mentor would be, like, to me, it's, like, it's the best part because it's just like there's so much honesty there.
Right.
And I think another part about that would be a great key for a mentor is like being a connector with your own network, right? So if you are mentoring someone, like you should, like I feel like even at work at times, like I'll be like, oh, let me connect you with this person that like knows about that. Like I may not know, have that information.
Right.
But this person might, or like they have that sort of experience. Right. So I think in a way, like being a connector, with your own network to whoever you're mentoring. And then as far as advice to the tribe, I would say just like, talk to other groups within like school or work. There's usually some sort of, like, women, like, in STEM organization, whether that be SWE. At NI, we have this called, like, NI Women's Network. And most of the time, like, they always, like, initially, like, if you're always, like, kind of scared of, like, oh, well, I don't know if I'm going to find a mentor. Like, how do you go out of your way to find a mentor? Mm-hmm. Like, they usually have some sort of, like, program in place that can, like, match you up with people with similar, like, interests and, like, backgrounds as you. And I think for me, in both experiences, like, both when I was in school and now at work, like, I got involved, like, as soon as I saw the opportunity, just because that way I got to meet more people and can, like, have a little bit more, like, I guess, input on who I want my mentor to be.
Right, right. Because there may be some people that want to be your mentor, and you're like, I don't think you're going to give me what I need to be my mentor. And I love the part you mentioned about, like, you know, going to, like, employee resource groups. So, like, you mentioned women and I. And I think, too, sometimes, and I don't think about it this way, but as you were saying, that made me think. Also think about, like, what do you want yourself to be in 10 years, right? Like, think about, like, mm-hmm. and it's very far away, but think about, like, what do you want to be doing? What's going to be important to you? And almost find someone that's at that, where you want to be placed, that you want to emulate. Not necessarily, like, you want to be exactly like them, but, like, say, for instance, like, I want, in 10 years, I want to be on a nonprofit board. Like, let's just say that. Then, in my mind, maybe I need to find a mentor who's currently on a nonprofit board, leading a board, so I can glean and learn from them on what they did to get there, right? Because I think that allows you to get perspective from someone that's already doing it or is doing it. And it can have, sometimes I think too, mentorship happens really organically, because I think sometimes there's programmatic mentors and sometimes it's just like, man, I met you or we got connected via someone else because you're in their network. Or it may have just been like a cold reach out. Like sometimes I too, like you can just randomly reach out to someone and you may think, oh, they'll never respond, and they will. And you just never know what that will transpire to. So I think sometimes, you know, in my opinion, those like more informal mentors have been, you know, so crucial to like my life and my development and thinking of, okay, where do I want to be in, it doesn't have to be 10, but like maybe 5 years, and what do I want that to look like? And who can I find that's doing what I want that to look like, so they can kind of lean into me and guide me through that process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. Like I feel like the sooner you get involved into something that like kind of brings people together, like mm-hmm. then you get to meet those people and then you get to learn like what they do and kind of open those doors of like, maybe I want to reach out to this person, or like that person's doing like what I want to be doing in 5 years.
Right. Right.
But yeah, like having that, like, that drive and push to at least join something like that, just because it does make it a little bit easier to open up that your own network to then foster mentorship opportunities.
Oh yeah, and it's gonna be uncomfortable, right? Like no one feels comfortable going into like spaces where you know no one is like, oh, like do I have to? It's almost like you gotta push yourself in your mind, like you know it's gonna be uncomfortable when you first do it, but like it'll turn out something, you know, great. Like, that's kind of how Sweet was for me. Like, it was super uncomfortable. I was like, I don't know anyone in this room. And, like, let alone I don't know any female engineers. Like, there's like a whole bunch of them. Like, I've never met any of them because none of them are in computer engineering. I'm by myself, basically, with a couple of other people. But, like, once you get past that, like, mental block of, like, it's uncomfortable, I'm not really sure, like, maybe I can make up an excuse of something else I can be doing that may not be as beneficial during this time that I know I should be going to this, you know, to your point, event or engagement. And then, you know, you just got to push yourself. So I think too, like, it's about putting yourself in those uncomfortable situations so that you can grow and develop and you can, you know, push yourself to be even greater. And once you get, because that's, I think, part of the hurdle too, is like, you got to kind of like, just be okay with being uncomfortable and being nervous and sweating. Everyone's been there, right? Like, it's totally normal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always just like, you know, just like breaking that bubble kind of thing. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Just get out of there and it'll be fine. Like, at the end of the day, you look back on it and you're like, you know, it wasn't really that bad.
Exactly. In the grand scheme of things, it was all in my head, for sure. I love that. This has been really, really awesome to talk with you and to learn so much more. I know you said, well, I'm very new in my career, but you've just given so many good gems. So don't ever take that for granted either. But, you know, before we wrap up, I'm going to gain another little gem for you. But at the end of every episode, I always ask my guests to provide a word to the wise. It can be a word, a statement, a poem, a quote, anything that you would like to leave to just empower the tribe. And so what is your word to the wise?
I think that for me, it'll have to be, like, don't be afraid to reach out. Mm-hmm. just like whether that be like a person on LinkedIn or a person at work or at school, like really don't be afraid. The worst that they can do is not respond.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like, you know, you're still in the same spot as you were before you reached out. So it doesn't hurt. So really just like go for it and just reach out to anyone at this point.
Yeah, I know. Especially being virtual. You have the accessibility to, I love that. The accessibility to anyone is so huge now, especially with technology. Like, you know, you probably wouldn't even think, like, years ago, like, our parents were probably like, man, I could never get in touch with this. And then, like, you now, it's like, I could go on LinkedIn, or I could find them, or I could research them, and I could get in touch. So, no, I love that. Like, don't be afraid to reach out, and don't be fearful. Like, don't let that stop you from what I'll say, like, your breakthrough. You just never know. Awesome, awesome. Well, I appreciate you, Ivana, so much for being a guest on the Technically Female podcast today. And Tribe, as you know, if you're interested in being a guest for an upcoming podcast episode, send me an email at technicallyfemale@gmail.com. Otherwise, hope you have a blessed week and continue to share the STEMinism.